You are listening to Houston's longest-running sports radio morning show, The Bench with John Granato and Lance Erline on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John and Lance.
All right, 801 on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. 713-780-3776. If you want to get in here, 713-780-3776. The number to hang out with us here. Adam Schefter joined us a little bit earlier. Kelvin Sampson's going to join us at the bottom of the hour. So we got a lot of Cully stuff to talk about. Let's start with Roger here on the show. Hey, Roger, what's going on?
Fellas, what's happening?
How you doing,
what's
man?
Up, Roger? How are we doing, man?
I'm good. Man, y'all missing the whole point about the situation, man. This probably was Nick and David and saw David how long he'd been in the game, and they never had a real opportunity to say, hey, bro, I'm going to offer you an opportunity to be the coach. You're probably not going to last, but I'm going to give you a lot of bread. You're going to take all the heat for all this, so just ride with it. David, probably, you see the way he be chewing that gum on the sideline? That's a man thinking about his future plans with all this money he got. He put a smile down, so he probably was like, hey, I'm going to go back home to Tennessee or wherever I'm from, Mississippi, in bankroll. So, you know, I'm hurt. I ain't tripping about the way it happened. It's out, dude. Time to move on.
And I think you look at it, Roger, the way that I'm looking at it is that they basically, and I don't know this for a fact, but it might have been that simple where they said, look, this is, we can't make you any guarantees. We will make you very, very well paid. This owner will give you as much money as we tell him to, so don't worry. This owner knows nothing. So we can get you a ton of money, but what we need you to do is, this is the deal. I'm going to be heavily involved in decision-making outside, you know, from a roster building, but also I'm going to have my hands on some game management as well. So are you good with that? I mean, I've heard a lot of great things, or maybe he's known Cully for years. They've both been in football. Look, I trust you. I know that you'll keep our secrets and you'll do what we have, you know, what we need you to do. And you're going to be incredibly well compensated. It's not going to be the best situation for you. But basically, we're going to give you a chance to make more money than you've made in the last 20 years.
$2 million would have been David more Cully, than he made.
David Cully will make more money than he made in the last 25 years of coaching. Guaranteed. Maybe 30.
Oh, yeah.
Because I know what the salaries had been in the past. David Cully probably doubled what he had made for his career with this deal with the Texans. People should not feel badly for David Cully. I don't know that he still wanted to be there. If somebody told you, John, I'll give you $22 million for 1 year or for 2 years of work, what would you say?
I'll do one.
I mean, who doesn't choose that?
Do one.
Listen, you know what? I'll give you $22 million for 4 years of work or for 1 year of work. Which one are you choosing? A. Yeah. Or no, B, actually.
Let's get AC in here. Hey, AC.
Hey, what's going on, fellas?
How you doing, man?
How we doing, AC?
Good, good, man. I don't know. I feel kind of dirty this morning about the firing. I think Coach was, obviously he wasn't the right guy for the job, but I don't know. It felt like he was almost a pawn, you know, and he seemed like a nice guy. I know what you guys said about the money and everything, but at the end of the day, he was a respected coach and he came to this city and he just got ridiculed day after day after day. And I don't know. I don't know if he'll ever get another job in the league. So if he has to end it on that sour note after being a coach for, 20, 25 years, then, you know, it kind of sucks for him. You know, he feels like your uncle that you love and, you know, stuff just doesn't go right for him. I don't know. I kind of feel bad about it.
I mean, I think this is a great phone call because I brought this up when I was in Michigan doing the Joe Moore Award stuff, that once all the stuff came out about David Cully having the coach on the headset, I mean, having Caserio and Romeo on the headset, that really made me feel bad, and I'll tell you why. It's, you know, David Cully speaks with his outside voice. I think there are times he has a naivete of what he shouldn't say to kind of protect himself, which is on him. Like, you can't – but the Texans put him in that position. But really, he was out of the way, not caught. No one knew who he was nationally. He was just doing his thing, being a guy who everyone liked, handling his business as a coach. I assume being a good position coach, you know, well liked, well thought of, and basically it was a deal with the devil where you said, "Well, we'll give you a chance to make this much money."
You know what?
But you have to take that. But
give me $22 million. I understand. And I understand, John. I'll say things. I'll say analytics.
I understand. But I brought this up. Let me switch it. All of your background as a broadcaster, you you go out embarrassed.
Yeah.
And you and
give me $22 million. I'll go out embarrassed right now.
I get it. I don't know that he's, but he's in a position probably better than you are financially.
Yeah.
Before he even he has NFL pension, which is going to be a lot of money. I don't know that $22 million necessarily. It's great. He won't spend it all in his lifetime. It's great, but at the same time, he did sacrifice some of his reputation in doing this. It was a sacrifice he had
absolutely
to make.
He did.
And some of it was
he was outed. Let's put it this way. They outed him as a guy who really was an incompetent head coach. They outed him.
No, I mean, he kind of outed himself a lot.
Yeah, he
times.
Did. But you know what? It was worth it. It was worth the money. I'll make that trade all day. I'm not feeling sorry today for David Culley, not in the least. I know he only got 1 year. And listen,
do you
there's
feel,
only one African-American head coach in the NFL right now. You know that, right?
Mike Tomlin.
That's it.
But follow what AC said. Do you feel bad for him?
Not at all.
That he was a pawn and a puppet?
No, he
and kind of was. It
he
was,
made the
was
deal
embarrassed,
with the devil.
Was embarrassed during his stint, the 1 year stint?
I don't
stint.
Know that he was embarrassed by it. Do you really feel like he was? He said were all of these things.
Okay.
He admitted.
Were you embarrassed for him?
Sometimes.
I was.
Sometimes.
Yeah, I was.
Sometimes.
I think that's what AC's talking about is you put him in a position.
But I don't know that he is, though. I don't know that he was.
He may not be, but you put him in a, but he also uses outside voice all the time. Like, you put him in a position where, I mean.
No, you put he did a lot of that himself.
I get it. A lot of it himself.
Here's what stuck out to me when on Monday when he had that meeting that we played where his press conference, and he goes, you know, as far as I know, I'm the head coach. If he knew that he was going to be fired at some point, he was just brought in as a Band-Aid, because any actual head coach would have gone, yeah, I'm the head coach. They would have said it with some confidence and some conviction in their voice of, yeah, I've got a contract. I'm the head coach. Until somebody tells me to get out of my office, I'm the head coach of this team.
Right.
He said it, well, as far as I know, I'm the head coach. I mean, they haven't told me otherwise.
Well, then
I'm
the head coach. I'm the head coach here. That's all.
But if you know you're the head coach, if you know that they want you, you're saying it with conviction that this is my job and nobody's coming to take it.
However, and I'll say this, there is no one that thought, oh, David Culley's the head coach, that's for sure. Not even him.
But that's my point, is that that shows that he knew what he was brought in.
Right.
He knew what he was doing.
Yeah, he knew it.
He knew
it.
He was coming in to get a paycheck.
I don't feel bad at all.
There may have been a discussion. There may have been a discussion at the front end where he knew the deal. Yeah. I think there probably was.
Probably.
You probably said, look, we're going to give you a chance. And the owner, trust me, we're going to be able to get you so much money that it will be worth your time. But it's not going to be a standard head coaching job. Like, I think he was probably told that going in. He knew that. He was called to the carpet for giving up too much information on the Deshaun Watson thing with the podcast with Steve Weiss. And I can't remember who Steve's co-host is. So, I don't know. I mean, what I care about now is who the Texans hire next. We're getting our David Culley stuff out right now. The only thing that's surprising about it is that they're willing to pay this much guaranteed money. That's the only thing that's really shocking. Them moving on to somebody else is not that shocking.
There's nothing shocking about him being fired.
You only do this, though.
And, oh, by the way, can we get off the 4 days? Who gives a rat's ass that it was four days?
I don't care.
I didn't know that that Black Monday was the official day that everybody had to be fired. What is he? I don't the infatuation with the media over this 4 days of keeping him in limbo. He was 4 days longer as the head coach of the Houston Texans than he should have been. He was a year and 4 days longer the head coach of the Houston Texans than he should have been, because he should have never been the head coach of the Houston Texans. So for him to wait 4 days to collect another $17 million, everybody is up in arms that the Texans are unprofessional.
That's weird. That's weird to me. There's nothing happening in this 4 day span.
No.
Like, relative to football decisions.
Oh my God. How could they wait 4 days and keep him in? Who cares? What? Another 4 days. Like, that makes a huge difference in anyone's life. It's amazing.
Well, and Ian Rappaport, as a matter of fact, spoke on this.
Well, we'll start with how this went down with the Houston Texans. And from what I understand, Nick Cassero, the general manager, other members of the Houston Brass, and David Culley have been having meetings for the last several days to do a thorough review of not just his job status, but really how everything was going in the football department, and really just to completely take stock of things. And throughout that process, it was clear that David Culley's job absolutely hung in the balance. And Nick Cassero made the decision this afternoon that they were going to part ways with David Culley.
Yeah, I mean, so they had meetings and they were talking and they, you know what, it took them a little bit longer to decide, or they just found out that Gerard Mayo was, hey, we got word from his agent, Gerard Mayo really would like that job. He's going to move on from
That's
the Patriots.
That's what I think happened.
Yeah. And so it was four more. I can't.
Or Josh or another
coach. I just don't
coach.
Understand all these people. They're so unprofessional. What? What is unprofessional about taking four more days to fire your coach?
Now,
you know what's unprofessional? Hiring a coach for 1 year, a puppet that shouldn't have been a head coach, and giving him $22 million for 1 year. Now, that's unprofessional.
Now, the Senior Bowl. Okay, so if it is Gerard Mayo, who is a linebacker's coach, inside linebacker's coach with New England, if it is him, he's got at least this weekend of games to go, at least this weekend against Buffalo. Some potential dates. You could have the head coach hired before the Senior Bowl, which is the back end of January. But the Texans, I don't know that they're going to be a team that sends any coaches to the Senior Bowl. It may just be personnel department.
How about that the Texans weren't even chosen? They were skipped over, their coaching staff, because of the limbo that
Jim Nagy's not stupid.
Yeah.
He knows, like, well, I don't even know if they're going to be here.
No, you couldn't.
Sucks, because that's a great advantage.
That is a great advantage to have. Yeah. So we'll talk about that on the other side. On the other side, and along with everything else, Kelvin Sampson at the bottom of the hour. But if you want to get in here about Coach Cully, you're more than welcome. This is your show. 713-780-3776. And it's your foot, Lance. Make sure that you have a great doctor for it.
Yeah, Dr. Latif is. One thing I want to tell you guys about with the chronic foot pain, if you step out of the bed and you feel that pain and it takes you a while, maybe you did like I used to do, which is step on a pillow, you almost have to warm the foot up. That's plantar fasciitis, and it is a mother. Man, it can be really, really bad. You have to get corrective lifts in your shoes, or, you know, you may have to wear a certain type of shoe. You may have to wear a certain type of arch support. Well, it can also be cured and be helped by Dr. Latif Nuruddin over at Bayou City Ankle and Foot. They are doing a great job, and he's doing a great job. He's a former athlete, played football at Baylor. He understands what it means to get you back healthy and being able to perform at your best, whether it's running or walking or playing weekend sports or just being pain-free when you get out of bed in the morning. He's a guy that can do that for you. And you might need a surgery. You might need something less invasive and maybe something much more passive. And he can help diagnose that and help you. Bunions, hammer toes, ankle and foot injuries, children's feet problem, heel pain, diabetic foot issues, running and sports injuries. These are all areas where he can help you. And it's right here in Houston. And he's a lifelong Houstonian. So make sure you go see Dr. Latif and schedule your appointment. 281-500-8891. That's 281-500-8891. That's Bayou City Foot and Ankle.
This is The Bench on ESPN 97.5.
What's poppin'?
Who you a
brand new whip, just hopped in.
You found The Bench on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Now coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
All right, 817 ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. 713-780-3776. Let's continue the calls in here. We got some cuts from Adam Schefter. If you missed him earlier in the show, he was with us. Kelvin Sampson going to join us in 12 minutes here. Let us get Jeff. Oh, which Jeff? We've got two Jeffs. All right, Jeff won. Hey, Jeff, how are you?
Hey, doing good, guys. Good morning. Let's not act surprised. This is just like every Houston organization. Remember when the Astros did the Bo Porter? Then the Rockets are doing with Paul Silas. Paul Silas.
Steve.
But I'm predicting the future on the clear waters of Galveston. There's going to be a banana floaty, and it's going to be Casario, Easterby, probably Edelman. Probably Josh McDaniel, and Burkhead, and it's going to be the whole New England in the clear waters of Galveston. I'm predicting it, guys.
I've heard this. Bo Porter was, I think John's the first one to call him Bo Cully, because how predictable was this? It was very, very predictable. Bo Porter was brought in, it feels like, to take the lumps on a team that wasn't talented. This is a similar thing. Steven Silas is not the same thing. I've heard people, it looks that way now, but I think people are misremembering. Steven Silas was brought in to coach James. He was brought in to coach James Harden. James Harden is the one who flipped the script on that one. after demanding that they get rid of, you know, Chris Paul, they got Russell Westbrook, and then Russell Westbrook wanted out. And then they moved Russell, and then James like, well, I don't want to be here anymore. And Stephen Silas is all like, James isn't even returning my calls. Stephen Silas was actually a – Bo Porter and David Culley were not highly coveted managerial slash head coaching candidates. Stephen Silas was. Stephen Silas is known as a good offensive coach, a guy who came from a good, you know, organization in Dallas, one that had, you know, blends analytics with true basketball stuff. And Stephen Silas is not a sacrificial lamb. Now, everything that's transpired on the roster, we'll see if he gets a long-term stay. But he was hired to coach James and to be a fresh start for what Mike D'Antoni has started. Some people have kind of altered. They've kind of altered the reality of what they felt like Stephen Silas, that he was brought in as a lame duck. He wasn't. When he was hired, James Harden was definitely a Houston Rocket, and they didn't know James was going to pull this crap. And then James, I guess, didn't like Stephen Silas, didn't want to be with Stephen Silas, didn't want to be with the Rockets anymore, and just kind of out of nowhere said,
how can you with Stephen Silas? Okay.
Yeah, so I don't. Stephen Silas, to me, doesn't fit that same narrative that people – I even heard one guy say, they're doing this to I get what it looks like, but Dusty Baker doesn't fit in the conversation either. Dusty Baker was basically implemented by Major League Baseball to take the bullets through the tough times because Dusty's old school and he's been through it and he's tough. But then Dusty was also given a team that had an inordinate amount of talent and ability. And so that's not a bad job for – this was not a bad job. Was it a tough situation? Yeah. Was it a bad job for Dusty Baker? Absolutely not.
Hell no. No. It's an idea. It couldn't have been better. He gets up to the – are you kidding me?
Stephen Silas had some bad luck, and I feel bad for him because he was a coveted coach.
No, Dusty's the exact opposite. Dusty probably says to a Marlins team, nah, I ain't doing that. Why would I do that? What do I want to do that
for? Dusty's a bad example.
Yeah. I mean, Dusty's the exact opposite of what happened here with Bo Culley. Jeff, the other Jeff. What's going on, Jeff?
Hey, guys. I want to talk about how, and nobody's really talking about this, Davis Mills looking good, I think, expedited this firing. Because if Davis Mills looked terrible, no coach would have wanted to come here. You know, Gerard Mayo, you know, all these other coaching candidates are now interested in Texas. Because if you have a quarterback prospect that looks good, everything else can be fixed. You know, you can fix your O-line, you can fix the D-line, et cetera. But if you have that quarterback, it makes the job much more attractive. And I think it was an unexpected surprise in a good way in that Casario's like, okay, I can actually maybe get my guy in here now a year earlier rather than waiting one more year of the Culley experience and then drafting somebody. And I think that's a really interesting aspect to see now. But going into next year, the expectations are to see a lot more improvement out of Mills. And now the coach gets to do, am I keeping Mills or drafting my guy next year versus, you know, a 2-15 year on my record. I don't want that. Now it's like, okay, I can evaluate and then draft my guy. This is a good job to have now compared to Balky in Jacksonville, you know, and other jobs out there like Chicago. The Texans job now moved up a notch because of Davis Mills. And I'll let y'all talk about that.
So I agree. I think maybe you're taking it a little bit too far. I don't know that he's – listen, I think it helps the organization in that you don't have to draft a quarterback right away. That it's a much better situation in that you can fill holes that you would have had to use the number 3 overall pick on a quarterback and probably reach for a quarterback in that situation, a Kenny Pickett or whomever, that you would have had to reach in that. And so it's much better for the organization. Listen, Davis Mills isn't a sure thing. I don't know that any coach is coming here saying, wow, they got Davis Mills, I got to get to that job.
No, we you know, Davis Mills gets blown up a little bit, but that's not a guy that everyone's going to go like, I'm not missing out on a chance to have Davis Mills. Like, that's not something people are going to say out loud. They may like the kid and think that he's got a shot, but they're not saying, well, this is a can't-miss
job. That said, he played better than expected. He was pretty good. I think, you know, the jury is still out whether or not he is going to be the long-term answer. I think it's very much out. But he had a nice start to his career. And you know what? It's a nice – it's really great for the organization. Whether or not he attracts a coach here, I don't know. I don't know about that.
Adam Schefter joined us this morning. We've got some cuts to play for you here where you can catch up. He had some really interesting things. And one of the things he said was he believes the Texans' job might be a little more attractive than sometimes we give it credit for.
Let me say this, that there are 32 of these jobs, and so they're always going to be desirable, and there always will be somebody – a la David Culley, that wants to coach that football team. Always. Do I think that the Texans' job right now is as desirable as some of the others? Probably not. But I don't think that means very much. You know, they're in the process of trying to remake the franchise. They still offer that opportunity. There is some talent there. And if the people, the person that they hire, has worked with Nick before, then that will be more appealing. You know, so, I mean, there are certain things that the Texans do offer. I don't think you say, boy, that's a job that I really want to go take that job right now. But it is a head coaching job, and somebody absolutely will want it.
So you're telling me that this is a that the Texans have a good reputation around the league?
They've got a lot of work to get done, and a lot to clean up, and really, honestly, a culture to reset. Because their reputation around the league is not very good.
That's an understatement. All right, we're taking a break because Kelvin Sampson's joining us at the bottom of the hour. We're going to break.
Best coach in the city?
But without a doubt, yeah. It's not even arguable who is the best coach in this city, and it's Kelvin Sampson. We're gonna hear from him on the other side. Right now, though, we got GimmeTheVin.com. That's GimmeTheVin.com. If you're looking for a great way to sell your car to a guy who's just nuts, I mean, the dude he's nuts. Okay, you can hear him tomorrow morning and find out for yourself just how goofy he is, because he is going to say all kinds of things on his radio show that you're just like, I don't think you can say that anymore on the radio. Used to be able to say it back in the 70s, but not anymore. Well, he still says it. It doesn't matter. He is. There's no decade that can hold John Clay Wolf. So, and there's also no one who can compare as far as giving you more money for your vehicle. And it's a vehicle. You know, you might have some. Oh, I love this car. This was the best truck I've ever had. That's great. Give me as much as I can for it. That's all. And you can have all of those feelings you want. But guess what? Get the most you possibly can for your car. And you know where you do that? At GiveMeTheVIN.com, period, exclamation point. You're going to sell your car? GiveMeTheVIN.com. That's GiveMeTheVIN.com.
My name is Bob Lee, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5.
You found the Bench on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Now coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
All right, welcome back here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, bringing in the head coach. Man, I just got to tell you, Coach, we have been talking about you and the job that you're doing. Kelvin Sampson here with us on ESPN 97.5, and just amazing what you have done with the injuries that you've had. Coach, how do you go? I mean, this is a philosophical question, but welcome to the show. We appreciate you being here. It's just amazing what you are doing right now, being 11th in the country with the injuries to your main guns. How are you still staying on top of this thing?
Well, some of it's with the Band-Aid, John, and just, you know, this sounds almost too simplistic, but we have good players. Our depth is a little short. We're not as strong as we were. But, you know, we've got good kids. They handle things well. And I think they stand on the shoulders of all those kids that came before them. There's a sense of we don't want to let the program down. You know, the Galen Robinsons, the Rob Grays, the Damian Dotsons, the Nate Hintons, and Quentin Grimes, Dejon Giroux, Devontae Pollard, all those guys that came before these guys here. You know, most of these guys came because of the success of the program, and I think they have a responsibility, and I think they feel this. I can see it in our meetings, in our our film sessions, practices, when I talk to them during stretching lines or meet with them in the office, you know, they expect to win. You know, and that's a unbelievable attitude and approach that these kids have, and I'm really proud of them for that.
Yeah, but Coach, you've also developed a culture that it's bigger than a player. It's bigger than any two players. It's a team-oriented culture where you defend, you hit the glass as a team, you defend as a team. And I would think it's a little bit easier to have a next man up mentality and mindset and philosophy when everyone is buying into the bigger picture as a whole.
No question. That's why you work so hard. And, you know, we've created a three-pronged system here based on standards and expectations and accountability. You know, we want our kids to do things right. You know, it's not easy to stay connected defensively the entire shot clock. It's not easy to rebound when you're out of position. It takes effort. It takes toughness. It takes work. And that's what we build our program on. You know, we're going to have trouble scoring in games. You know, we're not a great outside shooting team. I think we're last right now in the league after three games. But, you know, there's other things that we can do to facilitate winning. You know, last year's team, can't tell you how many times we won shooting 34 or 35%. And those are the games where people says, well, that was an ugly win. I've been doing this for 30-plus years. I've never seen an ugly win. They're wins. And being able to win ugly is something this team's going to have to continue to do on nights when we're not shooting it well.
Coach, all your time in college basketball and the way that these guys play, it's so great. You mentioned the effort. You spent a bunch of time in the NBA as well. I would imagine it just watching the effort level of the NBA versus the effort level of your kids at University of Houston, it had to be maddening for you at times in the NBA, was it?
Head scratching. wanted to slam my clipboard down. I still don't know why I carried that damn clipboard out to the bench, by the way. you know, sometimes I would write things like number so-and-so, wanted to change the scheme, and my answer was, why not play harder? You know, during timeouts, you know, players will come over and say, you know, that's not working. We need to change up how we're doing this. No, we don't need to change anything. You need to change. You know, how about giving a little bit more effort and getting up to the line of scrimmage or sprinting back on defense or being where you're supposed to be in this coverage? You know, I always thought if you tried hard. You know, my dad was a high school coach, and you know, you never hear this word anymore, but hustle. You know, hustle doesn't take any talent. You know, most of the things in basketball, if you can just be good at the things that don't require great talent, then when you do have talent, that's how you become a good team. But it starts with the basics, and the basics are play for each other, play hard. Be the first one on the ground after a loose ball. You know, make a multiple effort when the ball hits the rim. You know, you can tell a lot about a basketball team and their culture, or the things that they emphasize at least, when the ball hits the rim at both ends. You know, how hard do you go after it? You know, it's a loose ball. Most rebounds are taken below the level of the rim. You know, and that's something that you know, we ingrain in our kids' heads from when they get here. But, you know, it goes back even further to evaluation. You know, recruiting is an umbrella. But underneath that umbrella comes evaluation. Who do you want to coach? Who do you not yes. want to coach? Mm-hmm. Who do you think will fit into our culture? And all that goes into getting kids to play the right way.
Well, first let me say that your answer shows that you can never be an NBA head coach again. They're going to hate you with that answer, with all your accountability answers and play harder. But this is one of the things that I find interesting from a team building standpoint. All I hear about is that young players are too much. They're all divas. They won't do anything. And we do see that at certain universities. And yet, here's two schools in football in Alabama and Georgia that somehow they get guys to buy in. Somehow everyone plays hard. Somehow everyone hustles and plays for each other. So it's not like that's impossible. And I always feel like you set a standard, you demand that standard, and you recruit players who have the mental toughness and the understanding that that is the standard. And that's clear that you have been able to do that.
Yeah, I wish I could take a clip of what you just said, because that's the secret sauce. You know, just because you're a high-rated player. You know, we took a kid this year by the name of Jairus Walker that we signed in November, Terrence Arsenault and Emmanuel Sharp. Now, all three of those kids are extremely talented, but they all know what they're getting into. You know, we don't hide anything here. You know, these kids all watch us on TV. They watch our big games. They read about us. They get on the internet. But one of the things that we try to do when we recruit a kid, especially when we get them on campus, I don't spend a lot of time with them until Sunday. They get in on Friday. If they're coming from a distance, maybe get them in late Thursday night and start the visit Friday morning. Now, I'll meet them and see them at meals here and there. No, I don't go out to all the meals, actually. But we encourage them to spend time with the players. So they'll ask questions of the players that they would not ask of us. You know, coaches are pretty good at telling kids what they want to hear. Players are really good at telling them what they need to hear. And so I think our best recruiters, the kids that really put it on the line for us, are the kids that have been here. You know, the third and fourth year players. You know, first year players are still trying to figure out whether they're on foot or horseback. But the veteran guys, they know. They tell them, hey, there's going to be an accountability. Coach is going to get on you. Coach Kellen, Coach Kwanis, Coach KC, Coach Hollis. We're going to be extremely honest, almost to a fault. But if you want to be the best you can be, if you want to see what your ceiling is and try to hit it, then this is where you should come. But we've done a good job evaluating prior to those kids getting on campus. We want kids that are driven, that are ambitious, that have a little chip on their shoulder, because our school has a chip on its shoulder. Our athletic department does. Our basketball team does. You know, I'm so proud of Dana and the football team last year after the Texas Tech game. You know, that was an empty wagon. You could hear it because it was so quiet. But as the season wore on and they grew momentum, you could tell what their culture was. And I give all the credit to the senior leaders on that team, the players that stuck it out, and Dana and his staff. And that was a beautiful picture for me to see that, you know, our football program, which to me is the flagship program of your university, athletic department at least, be such great representatives of what we want to be. So, you know, I think we have a good thing going on over here at the University of Houston with Leroy and Carl. The football team, swimming and diving, women's softball, our volleyball and soccer teams were awesome this year. So I'm just really proud of all the coaches and our administration for giving all the coaches a chance to succeed. Because as a coach, that's all you want.
Kelvin Sampson with us here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Did you expect to get this kind of output out of Josh Carlton?
Yes. I didn't have visions of 30-point games because that was never the plan. The plan was, and we had a three-strong prong to plan with our offense. It was probably Fabian first, Josh second, but more Marcus and Tremont. Tremont being so good in middle pick and rolls and the space floor, at getting into the paint, making reads. Marcus giving him the freedom and space to play and shoot. You know, anytime he felt like he had space to go make a play. There's a freedom that's earned there. But, you know, freedom's kind of like those guys that's in prison. They had freedom, too. But just because you have freedom doesn't mean you're going to be able to keep it. You've got to earn your right to have that freedom. And Marcus and Tremont did. Josh had not yet. But I'll give Josh all the credit for this, guys. When he got here in June, he surrendered to us. He was overweight. He's out of shape. Coach Bishop in our strength and performance area, John Houston, our trainer, worked so hard with that kid just to get him in a position where he could compete. But then when he got in shape, I started Reggie Chaney, who started on last year's Final Four team at the five. But you could tell Josh was coming. And you never want it to be this way, but Marcus and Tremon has opened up the lane for opportunities for Josh. Now, Josh has another level he can get to, not in terms of scoring, but passing the ball out of the post better, especially out of double teams, because he's not going to see a lot of single coverage anymore. They're going to bring somebody at him, whether it's a guard, help side, weak side, ball side, another post. He's going to have to figure that out. So we spend portions of our practice every day guarding Josh the way other teams might, so he can know where to go with the ball when he gets doubled. But, you know, all credit to that kid for coming in here with the right attitude and embracing our culture and working. He's been a joy to be around and coach.
Without Marcus and Tremon, for the most part this season, who is the coach on the floor? Who is the guy that everybody looks to, Coach?
Yeah, that's a great question. The guy that's really the silver cloud as far has been Fabian White. Fabian's just a great kid. You know, I love his family. I love his background. You know, he played high school ball with Carson Edwards over at Atascocita, which means I didn't get to see him do much offensively. But you could tell, and I saw him as a junior, that this was a kid that we wanted in our program because he was strictly a high school five. And I think Kellen has done an awesome job developing Fabian's offensive game and giving him the confidence to go on the floor and do things that he probably never thought he could. And I think through that work has given him a confidence and an air of, this is my program now. This is my time. And he's done that with his leadership. And he gives our players a little bit of a swag. You know, Rob Gray did that for us. Damian Dotson did that for us. Dejan Giroux really did it for us, and Quentin. But Fabian is that guy now. You know, he's been here. I think he's the second all-time winningest player in the history of the school, only behind Michael Young. I think Michael has 109 wins, and Fabian and Galen are tied at 103. So Fabian has a chance, an opportunity to leave here as the all-time winningest player. And I don't think he would want any other way to describe his career.
That's
awesome.
I can tell you, as somebody who grew up, my dad was coaching football at U of H at the time. So as somebody who grew up going to Phi Slamma Jamma games and watching the way they recruited the Houston area and just, you know, the domination. And we watched so much college basketball back then. I got to tell you, one of the things I see from your team over the last, especially the last 3 years, has been, I'm not saying it's the exact same, and there is no Patrick Ewing, but you've got elements of those old John Thompson Georgetown teams with the way that your guys play.
That's probably a pretty good observation. We kind of shoot free throws like those old Georgetown teams.
Yeah, well, it's, or those old Houston teams, too. But, I mean, never about one guy on those teams. They had Reggie Williams, and they had Ewing. I mean, Ewing was the one guy, but Michael Graham. But there were always – like, you just knew it was going to be – I know Nolan Richardson had the 40 minutes of hell or whatever, but the 40 minutes of hell started with Georgetown, and I feel like the way that you coach and the way that your guys play, there's just some real similarities to those old-school Georgetown squads.
I wouldn't disagree with that because I think their identity was based on the physicality, toughness, And when they walked on the court, I think the other team knew that they were going to be in a fight that night. And one of the things I always, whatever team I coached, and I think our Houston teams has probably done the best of this, is just don't be easy to play against. You know, in whatever, whether it's setting screens or receiving screens or fighting for rebounds, fighting for loose balls, making the extra pass. Now, basketball is meant to be played the right way. And I think our fans have embraced that. And I think they enjoy watching us play, not because we win, but because our kids try hard. And that's, you know, I think Houston's a, you know, bootstrap, hardworking, blue collar, and that's what our program is. You know, we're not a great team. Obviously, if we were a 7 or 8 or 9, you know, we're probably a little bit lower than that. Again, our inability to make open shots is a concern. We try to fight that with our offensive rebounding percentage. You know, but every night is going to be a war. You know, we were up 3 at halftime at South Florida. Temple game came down to the last 2 minutes, Wichita State. But every game, I think this team will get more solid in how we want to approach the other team. But at the end of the day, we just want to be hard to play against.
And let's get out there next week. Going to be back. Tulsa tomorrow at Tulsa, and then South Florida and East Carolina. Let's go, people, Tuesday and Saturday. Let's support this basketball Final Four team. Let's get out there to the Fertitta Center and support this club because it is worth watching. Coach, we appreciate you. Thanks for hanging with us. Thanks for your time, and good luck at Tulsa tomorrow.
Okay, guys. Thank you for having me on.
All right. There's Coach Kelvin Sampson right here on ESPN 97.5. And 92.5. All right, 713-780-3776. You want to get in here and we'll get back to Coach Cully talk on the other side, right here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
You're listening to The Bench on ESPN 97.5. The conversation continues on The Bench on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
All right, welcome back here on ESPN 97.5. It's so funny. Lance and I have a common NFL guy as a friend. He's texting, looks like Mayo, you guys. It looks like, and then he sends a picture of the Texans logo with the Patriots. The back is the Patriots, you know, the back of his... their logo, and it's just it is. You can say what you want that this is not Patriot South. You can say that all day, but guess what? The heavy favorite, and I don't think that there's any other candidates, is going to come from the Patriots organization. It's going to be Gerard Mayo. I don't think it's Brian Flores because we see Brian Flores is bashing heads with GMs. They don't want none of that.
Would you want to go from Miami here, honestly? I just don't think that.
Well, there's only 32 jobs. I mean, it's not like...
No, but if you have other choices.
Well, if you do, and it looks like Brian Flores does. But I just saw such a disturbing video. Who was it? Oh, Obfuscator sent it. It's Josh McDaniels running up to Jack Easterby, and the biggest hug, like they love, and they were embracing for a long time, and the two of them, and it was like, oh my god,
dude, I told you, Josh McDaniels was bringing Jack to Indianapolis when he got hired. He was bringing Jack to Indianapolis. That's how much he likes Jack. And it wasn't until he backed out that Jack's like, oh crap. And I've heard that, I don't think it was either Kraft or Belichick, I think it was Kraft, wasn't really down with Jack anymore. I think he had burned some bridges. I think Easterby may have made some comments about dalliances.
About massages, yeah.
Yeah, and so that's why he's like, hey, Bill, what's up? I'm like, yeah, absolutely. I'd love to have you. Like, hey, what's the deal with this Brian Gang guy? Have you seen my core competence chart that I put together?
So, to me... Casario's on the headset. There's more stories coming out about this Pro Football Scoop, and there's another one to Boston Globe about they did the pieces about how Casario is on the headset every game and giving down a distance to Josh McDaniels. Josh McDaniels is hugging Jack Easterby. It's like how Josh McDaniels is the obvious choice here, although Josh McDaniels was probably also the next choice for the New England Patriots. So if I'm him, I'm like, slow down. I love you, Nick. I love you, Jack, but I could be the
coach
of the Patriots.
Gerard Mayo is the guy that checks a lot of boxes.
Gerard Mayo, and actually we had Adam Schefter on earlier, and Gerard Mayo, we asked him about him being the number one candidate.
Well, I just think he's a young guy that's going to be in demand. The question is he ready right now? I think there are people that wonder that. But they also know that he's going to be a head coach at some point in time, that he's dynamic, he's charismatic, he's all those things, and he's going to be a good head coach one day. The question is,
is it this day? Do they want to bring him in perhaps before he's ready and grow with him, or do they want to wait a little bit? I just think they'd be in the mix for that job. I'm not telling he gets the job. I don't know that he gets the job. I don't know if they know who gets the job right now. But I'll be very surprised if he's not in the mix of candidates that's under consideration for that job.
I think they know already who their coach is.
I don't think they would have waited for 4 days. I think this was all done with the idea of we're going to do our back checking. We already got to pay this guy a lot of money, David Culley. So if we don't get the guy we want, we'll just wait another year, and then we'll see if Josh McDaniels is interested in the job the next year, or Mayo, you know, gets another year. And I think once Mayo or McDaniels or whoever it is said, yes, we're very interested, that's when I think they pulled the trigger on Culley. I think the reason they waited was because they needed to know that the guy that they were targeting was – that there was dual interest. And I think once they got that dual interest, I think they realized we can go ahead and flush David Culley and move on to the next guy.
7378037776 is the number. If you want to hang out with us here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, 7378037776. Let's catch up on breaks. Evan Drellich is going to join us from The Athletic, is going to join us at the bottom of the hour to talk about this MLB. There's a story brewing, too, a big brouhaha over a minor league ownership that we will talk about on the other side right here.
We'll get your calls coming in about the Texans, about David Culley, about anything Adam Schefter had to say. You guys can jump in, 713-780-3776. We'll rifle through your thoughts, and you can make your voice heard right here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. You can also listen to the podcast whenever you're ready at ESPN975.com. Go to the bench and you can listen to as much of the show that you may have missed. Also, our entire interview with Adam Schefter, which started at 7:15.
Right. Right now, though, I'm talking about my peeps over at Chastain Ford. I love those people. Love what they've done for me, what they're going to do for me. I'm in on the new Ford Lightning F-150. I'm going to get one, and I'm going to get it through Chastain Ford. And you, my friends, can get one, too. You're going to have to wait a little bit because they're on back order. But I'm going to tell you this. Every single car, every car and truck right now in the entire industry is there. You're going to order it, and then there's going to deliver it to you. There are very few cars on the lots anymore. That's okay. You get to customize it exactly how you want it, not how the dealership wants it, not how Detroit wants you to have it, exactly how you want to have it. And at Chastain Ford, they're never going to say, hey, you got to get this too. You need this on it too. At zero, no way will they ever do that. Never an add-on. And that's awesome. And that's the way you want a dealership to be, to worry about you and your payments, to have the vehicle exactly as you want it. And that's happening every single day with my people over at Chastain Ford. And it's not happening at other dealerships. So if you're looking for the best way to get into that Ford car or truck, go see my peeps over at Chastain Ford. It's on 610 at Homestead, not Hempstead, 5 minutes from downtown, or you can do it all online at ChastainFord.com.
ESPN 97.5.